trust not too much to that enchanting face. Beauty's a charm, but soon the charm will pass. Virgil. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate the support. Last couple episodes have been very well received, and I do, again, as always, appreciate that. If you're a newcomer, welcome. I hope you will enjoy and go back and listen to our backlog of episodes. And if you're a returning listener, again, I really can't thank you guys enough. This week, we will try to finish up our overview of Neolithic cultures in China between the years of 6 and 4000 BC, BCE, whichever you prefer. I also kind of want to do a rough overview of Chinese mythology slash early historiography and what they've known or believed about their earliest days. Though I was traveling a lot this week, I took a couple extra days off because of Memorial Day, so I haven't had as much time to work on the episode as I normally do, so this one might not get as much done as I want to, but regardless, if I don't finish up what I want to do this week, we'll go forward into, we'll just continue on to next week, and then after that we'll work on Korea, Japan, and finish up East Asia, then we'll move to Maritime Southeast Asia, and then on from there. For now, though, we focus on the last area of Neolithic development in China. But I should point out that this region has not always been firmly part of China. It includes parts of Inner Mongolia, Manchuria, which, in the grand view of history, has only been directly controlled by the Chinese state for a few hundred years, and has been predominantly occupied by the Han Chinese for an even shorter period. But that's all topics we'll discuss much later in the future. But, like all good early Neolithic locations, the cultures that emerge are centered around or near river valley. In this case, it's the Liao River, or the Liao He, and its numerous tributaries. The name means something like the faraway river or the distant river. And this name should give an idea of where the river rested in the popular Chinese imagination. Today, it is around 1,345 kilometers long, which is around 837 miles. And it has around 10 tributaries now, but in the past it had more. Two of the three largest tributaries were cut off from the Liao in the late 1950s. For the emerging cultures of the Liao. As always, this is just covering sedentary peoples. There are still many nomadic hunter-gatherers, but they aren't developing as quickly or leaving as much of an impact on the archaeological record. So, again, just putting that out there in front, as always, just so people are clear that, you know, they're not disappearing just yet. The first culture we'll be discussing along the Liao is known as the Xinglonghua culture. The name of the culture, of course, comes from the type site, which is a small village to the south of the hillside where the remains were originally found. The name's a little difficult to translate because the character Xing has a lot of readings, and some of them are very similar to the readings for Long. So I think my best interpretation for how it should be translated is something like the large prosperous hollow. It was first discovered in 1983, and the culture first occupies the area around 6200 BC, and it lasts until around 5500 BC, BCE. So around a 700-year run, not too bad, all things considered. Due to the nature of the environment, the site is very well preserved. It's not in a very wooded area. It's kind of right where the steppe begins. There's not a lot of trees. It's fairly cold. It doesn't get too much rainfall, I don't think. At least it didn't at this period. So it's very well preserved by the environment. their villages were not tightly compact. And, you know, they would shift over time, building in one direction and then another as you know, ages progressed. I think they found around 3 to 5 separate villages and kind of clusters. And at each of those, you would find a number of locations where they would dump refuse and trash. The largest, of course, actually is Xinglonghua. You know, that was the first one they discovered, and it ended up being the first. As we've seen in the past, that's not always the case. Some of these cultures, you know, it's named for a type site that actually ended up being a very small or a medium-sized site compared to others. But Xinglonghua covered around 20,000 square meters. The population is a little hard to guess at. Xinglonghua had 120 houses at the site. Now, the articles I've read didn't say if they were all in use at the same time. They may not know for sure, but I guess the fact that they're all around the same level in terms of where they were, you know, dug out of, means they were probably all abandoned, you know, reasonably around the same time. They were all pit houses, so their floors were dug down, and they didn't mention that they were plastered with anything like that, but they all had hearths in them, so there was a fire, and they weren't huge, but they weren't they weren't too small. So I imagine they probably housed nuclear families, parents, children, maybe one or two older adult relatives. Probably not much more than, 5 or 10 people to a home. All of the Xinglonghua villages had a single larger communal building, and the homes, were all very uniform. So they were almost exactly the same size, very similar in terms of how they were constructed. And this has led to the theory that they constructed their homes communally, with everyone kind of contributing in some way to building a house for their neighbors. It's possible, that this was an extended family group. Maybe you start off with, a couple of brothers, their wives, and children, and then as time goes on, you add on you keep building houses for your preceding or your following generations. They buried their adult dead under these homes, both men and women, though there are some interesting things to note about the differences in the sexes here. At Xinglonghua, they have found 34 burials, 23 males and 11 females. None of the men that had been found was older than 55, and none of the women was younger than 35. The youngest people found buried were in their early teens. They haven't discovered any infant burials. This meant that they may have been buried well outside the community, or possibly their remains were just exposed or cremated or something like that. Also, the fact that men don't reach old age tends to suggest they're dying earlier for a reason. I'm guessing this reason was due to violence outside of the villages. If it was for another reason, you would think the age discrepancy wouldn't be that large between the sexes. At least that's my theory. None of the articles seem to want to go into too much detail on that. So if anyone has any theories, I would love to hear them. I legitimately would. I would be interested in that. Also, with the women being older and presumably wiser, you would think that would mean that they probably played at least some role in leadership. Now, whether they were the overall rulers, if this was a matriarchy, that's not discussed. Because, again, at this point in Chinese archaeology, they were trying to move away from like the strict Marxist interpretation of things. But, in this case, I could accept an argument for that. But, again, there's no real differences in male and female burials. They're very similar, at least in terms of how they're buried. They didn't mention too many grave goods. I'm assuming that they were buried with tools and, smaller artifacts that may have been important to them in life. But there's no there's no discrepancy or differences noted in the writings about this site. So I'm assuming it was fairly egalitarian too, which, again, if you look at our other earlier Neolithic cultures with burials like this, there's not really a big distinction in most cases between men and women or between like some kind of social class. Their tools were made of both bone and stone. They also made decorations of jade. They have small kind of polished jade rings that they found. They're not rings for like fingers, at least I don't think they were, but they're more like hoops, like almost earrings, though they were probably, made into necklaces. They may have made them into earrings as well. Necklaces, some kind of other amulets or things like that. But I think, I mean, they could have been some type of body decoration as well. They were not very reliant on agriculture. In fact, of all the Xinglonghua sites, only Xinglonghua itself has any evidence of agriculture being grown at the location. And they grew a very small amount of millet, but this would, again, have been just a small portion of their diet. Most of their diet would have come from wild plants as well as animals. With the animal portion, they found a mix of wild and domesticated animal bones, though which was the larger portion is debated, because some of the bones can't really be identified too well as being either a domesticated animal or not. So they're definitely hunting still. And they're herding, but the question is, which was more important to their diet? Of course, they are making pottery. Pottery's been present in East Asia for a very long time at this point. It's very sturdy. It's well made. They aren't really experimenting too much with different types of pottery. You don't see like a lot of different vessel shapes and sizes, or at least not as much variation in the shapes and sizes of vessels that you're seeing at sites further to the south. But again, it's well made. It seems to be very thick pottery, probably, you know, to help make it sturdy, to make it easier to move around. They aren't painting it, but they are beginning to make comb impressed patterns. And, you know, think of a hair comb. That's the kind of pattern they're talking about. It'd be like if you ran a hair comb around the edges of the pottery is the type of pattern that refers to. They did find a bone flute at Xinglonghua, though they didn't mention the type of bone. It doesn't appear to be like a crane bone, like the ones further south. But they did mention that it had five finger holes, so probably a little different sounding than the one they found further south at Jiaohu. But as I said, around 5,500. The Xinglonghua sites begin to be abandoned. Now, I didn't see, you know, any specific theories thrown out. I'm guessing that they had basically used up the resources after being there for a couple of hundred, or around 700 years or so. Again, the region's kind of right on that borderland of the steppe. It could have been that they were seeing some particularly rough winters, and it may have kind of cut down on the plant life in the area. Or, you know, again, they may have just reached the carrying capacity with their populations, so they had to abandon and move away. Or they may have, you know, moved somewhere else that just hasn't been discovered yet. That's also a possibility. But regardless, after a couple of hundred years, you begin to see the next Neolithic culture emerge along the Liao Dong, or excuse me, the Liao River. And this is known as the Jin Li culture. And this is found a little further south. It is found in what is now modern China. It's in the Huanggu district of Xinjiang, which is in the Liaoning province in northeast China. The name means something like the new joy, would be something like that. It could also be like new music, but I think New Joy's probably a better translation of the name. It's not named for a village, but it was like a block of apartments attached to like an electrical factory. So it was like the dormitory is called Jinli Dorm. And again, it was kind of attached to this this electrical producing station. It was discovered in the early 1970s. I think it was initially discovered in 72, and then they began excavations in 73, and they followed that up in 78 afterwards. And it starts right around 5,500, lasts to about 4,800. So, you know, right around the time the Xinglonghua disappears, this site emerged. Now, are they related? Possibly. I don't know if there's really much agreement about that. They definitely were practicing more agriculture than Xinglonghua, and the area is a little bit more suitable to agriculture. There are forests nearby. There's a little bit more trees and foliage. So this could have been an offshoot of Xinglonghua, but I think that is debated. The site itself was a little bit larger. I think it covered around 44 acres, which I think with the Xinglonghua, 20,000 square meters is around 5 acres. And the Jinli was kind of spread, I think, around 44. So definitely covered more ground. But the houses that they've discovered for the Jinli, they did not have nearly as many houses. They've only found around 40. Again, there are some similarities in terms of how the houses were built. They were pit houses. They were a little bit larger, so that might be part of it. But they all had hearths in the center. They, of course, had bone and stone, like the Xinglonghua. They also had jade, much like the Xinglonghua. But again, they were much more reliant on millet production, as well as domesticated pigs. And they had dogs as well, but I think more pigs than dogs, at least from what I've read. They also found like a very large wood carving. They think it may have been some type of totem worshipped by the group as a whole, though that, you know, that has been debated. Some people say, well, you don't know that they worshipped it. They could have just been like a very fancy art piece. I don't buy that. I think it probably was some type of family totem or representation of some type of deity or spirit they worshipped. But honestly, who really knows? The carving, because it's wood, though, it can be estimated fairly accurately. And it was about, I think, 7,200 years. So that means they would have carved it about 300 years after the site was initially occupied. Also, in addition to the other artifacts we talk about, we also know that they were producing charcoal. The area, again, is a little bit more forested where they were than the places up north. So, you know, they are able to produce charcoal fairly easily, which is obviously a great source of wood and heat. They are also directly on a river. They're on the Jinkai River, which is one of the tributaries for the Liao River. Didn't really get too much about their burial practices, but I believe they were all buried within the bounds of the village, or at least the adults were. I believe there's a very popular and fairly well-maintained museum at the site. So, you know, if you're interested, I think the museum online, they do have pictures of kind of like recreations of some of the houses. I'll try to find a picture or two, but I think they don't post too many of those because they want people to go there and view it. Around 4,800, the site is abandoned. And again, don't really have a firm reason why, but I imagine that they, you know, they probably abandoned it due to, again, lack of usable land for agriculture. They probably had to move for a number of reasons. About 700 years as well for them. Now, we're going to move back to the north, very close to the Xinglonghua site. In fact, the next culture, the Zhao Bao Go, is going to be centered around 18 kilometers to the southwest of where the Xinglonghua site was located, a little bit more in the mountains and hills of what is now the modern Alhan banner in China. And banner is just one of the regional, divisions of governorship that they use for Inner Mongolia and China. Instead of necessarily a province in Inner Mongolia and parts of, as well Manchuria, they still use the banner designation. Zhao Bao Go is, again, very close to the Xinglonghua. In fact, these people are much more likely to be related than, the Xinli culture. And again, they are kind of in the mountains. They're not directly on a river, though there are kind of some, some smaller lakes nearby. And they are between a couple of rivers, but they're not particularly close to either of them. They're south of what's called the Jarmoran River, and a little bit north of the Dai Ling River. The name comes from a nearby village, much in the case of the Xinglonghua. The name's a little difficult to get a meaning on. Zhao can be read as a few different ways. It's a surname. It was a city-state. It was a much larger state. It's kind of a concept of, it's like a political concept now as well. There's an old reading, which it could be like to run or to gallop or to move fast. So it might be best translated as something like the quick, precious, for lack of a better term, ditch. But that's kind of a rough translation. Don't 100% quote me on that. There might be a very, a much easier reading to make of it. The Zhao Bao Go, they emerge around 100 years after Xinglonghua is abandoned. And there is, again, a lot of similarities, between the Zhao Bao Go and the Xinglonghua. They were discovered very close, to each other geographically, but also temporally. They discovered Zhao Bao Go about 4 or 5 years after Xinglonghua was discovered. I think they were looking for more Xinglonghua sites, and then they discovered the Zhao Bao Go, which, there's that break of 100 years, and then, a couple of kilometers to your southeast, you find another site. Now, the reason they don't kind of connect these two is that there is a massive change in the pottery is the big difference. Like most good Neolithic divisions, pottery is a big difference in how some sites are designated. The Zhao Bao Go pottery is all handmade. It's still not being kind of mass-produced, but they have a lot more variety in terms of shapes and sizes. They had small, straight mouths, but they also had ones with long, thin necks. They had flat and round bellies. They had curved bottoms. And they were almost all polished. And they would use sand to geometrically kind of shape, like put shapes, geometrical shapes, and use that to inscribe them in to the pottery. They also had some that have animals carved or cut into the bellies of the pottery. And this is a big change from, the Xinglonghua, which again, they had, well-made hand pottery. It's very sturdy, but it was fairly uniform. They didn't have nearly the variety and shapes of sizes. and they didn't have anything like this type of design. So within 100 years, if these people are an extension of the Xinglonghua, they really upped their creative output. Or at least they may have moved 100 years, and then as time went on, they began to, you know, really develop their pottery at a fairly rapid pace. The Xiaobaogou disappear around 4,500. So they do last a little bit longer than both the Xinli and the Xinglonghua. So they have around a 900-year run, as opposed to like a 700-year run. The animal patterns have a very good attention to detail, especially of the heads. But towards the later end, they also begin to kind of experiment with kind of hybrid animals. They'll do flying deer, birds with kind of, you know, unusual patterns. Some think they might be magical birds. They have animals with pigs' heads, snakes' bodies. People think this might be an early type of dragon. So, you know, and the birds, you know, there is some links that people think they might have been phoenix related. So a creature like a dragon or a phoenix, you know, we've talked about potential early precursors to that notion in archaeological sites to the south. These could have been, you know, very widespread, you know, beliefs among a number of different people occupying the region. But that's all, you know, kind of debated. In terms of tools, they used a lot of the same styles of tools as the Xinglonghua. However, the Xiaobaogou make theirs a lot better. Same types, but they also polish the stones a lot more. They ground them a lot finer, made them last longer, essentially. And they, of course, do develop new types of tools as well. They begin to make more curved blades, probably for, you know, easy cutting of things, not just plants, but probably animals as well. They are definitely domesticating pigs. There is millet cultivation, though not nearly as much as, say, the Xinli culture. So if you look at where they are on a map, yeah, that makes sense. They're probably more reliant on rainfall agriculture than anything else. And being up in the mountains, probably not the best place to really go full hog on the on growing millet. But they do it to an extent. Though, again, they're still more reliant on harvested wild plants and their domesticated and wild animals. So hunting is still a big part of this culture as well. Another similarity between the Xinglonghua and the Xiaobaogou is the size of their settlements. The Xiaobaogou's site is even larger. We talked about Xinglonghua covering an area of about 20,000 square meters. The Xiaobaogou cover around 90,000 square meters. Their houses are also very organized as well, and also very uniform. They are either set into like a square or almost a trapezoid pattern, depending on the village. And they all have, you know, pit floors, and they're arranged into very orderly rows. Not quite, they're a little bit more organized than the Xinglonghua, but it's still kind of a very similar concept in how they were organized, at least in terms of housing. I couldn't find much on the Xiaobaogou's burial practices. It didn't really come up. I'm assuming they haven't found as many burials with the Xiaobaogou as they have the Xinglonghua. It's possible they were still burying them under homes, though they may have shifted to burying their dead outside of their communities. But again, I couldn't really get a firm answer on that. But that's kind of the highlights I was able to do. We do know that they kept animal skulls around, which is not something that you see at the Xinglonghua, at least that we've discovered. The heads are kept intact. They may have used them as a study point for their pottery. They may have kept them around for some type of religious ceremony. Maybe it's both. It probably was. But they weren't discarding the skulls for some animals along with everything else, with their other bones. And again, this could be a type of shamanistic attribute. Other older cultures have done this too. This isn't necessarily unique, but it is unique to this region. It hasn't really been pointed out in any other Neolithic culture, at least in the literature that I've read, which, again, some of this stuff has not been translated very well into English, so I kind of have to make do. So I do apologize for that. But that's kind of the highlights, I think, for these cultures for this week. And we're right around 30-minute mark. So I do think I'll go ahead and call this episode here. Next week, I'll kind of do that overview I was talking about of, Chinese myth and historiography, how they combine and how they kind of interact. I'm not going to go into too much detail because Chinese religion is very deep. And a lot of it probably hasn't developed, but some of Chinese historiography does cover very small portions of what we're talking about in this season. And I'll go into that, but, I hope you all join me for that episode next week. I don't know if that will be the entire episode. We may, if that's too short, I'll probably go ahead and start covering Korea as well. You guys will be able to tell that from the title, probably. Apologies that this episode was a little rougher. Again, I didn't have quite as much time to prepare due to my travels this week, but I still wanted to put an episode out this week, and I think I covered the high points. So, I hope you've enjoyed. Thank you all for joining me. Please like, download, subscribe, all that kind of good stuff. Rate 5 stars, depending on where you're listening or viewing. If you have any questions, comments, constructive criticism, please let me know. You can reach me via email at war@revpod@gmail.com. You can send me a direct message on Twitter/X, or you can comment on the YouTube videos. I do read those. I do try to respond there. I'd like to thank everyone for the last couple of weeks. Again, it's been very nice. I do live stream on YouTube. You're welcome to drop by and ask me questions there. I'm live most nights during the week and occasionally on the weekends. I've streamed, I think, every day for like the last week and a half. Probably only do up to Thursday this week, but we'll see about that. But thank you all again for joining me, as always. I hope I'll see you all next time. I hope you have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you're listening to this. And I will see you all next time. Peace.